Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. I'm excited. I got a great show ahead for you guys here. And I got the opportunity to sit down and screen Kindred Spirits before you guys even got to see it. Actually, I got to see the first three episodes of season 7. And boy, was I privileged. I got to tell you guys, you are in for a treat. It debuts tomorrow night, Friday, January 20th, on the Travel Channel. Or if you've got Discovery Plus, and by gosh, if you don't have it by now, I don't know what you're doing with your lives. Screen it when it comes up here on Friday. I think it's the first few episodes, or it may be, I don't think they put the entire season up, but you should be able to get at least the first episode, which is Broken Spirits. Folks, I got to tell you, it is entertaining. It's thrilling. You'll sit on the edge of your seat. There are some really, really entertaining episodes to begin the season. We're going to sit in with the entire cast today, Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, and Chip Coffey. And we're going to talk a little bit about the beginning of the season. We're going to talk as well about some of the development throughout the seasons and what's changed with this season. We'll do that now. Let's bring in everybody. Let's bring in Adam Berry, Amy Bruni, and Chip Coffey. Gang, welcome to Darkness Radio.
Thank you. How's it going?
Hey. Going good. Here's what we're going to do first. I have to ask this question, and this was kind of brewing in my mind as I was sitting and watching the episodes. First of all, I have to tip my cap to all of you. It's a refreshing change from where we were even a decade ago, where it was skeptical TV. Everything was skeptical TV when we were watching even a decade ago. You had to be a skeptic. You had to poo-poo everything you were doing when you were running around looking for ghosts. You had to deny that you even believed in ghosts. So I have to say it's a Kindred Spirits is a breath of fresh air in that you can actually use the B word. And that word is believer. So I want to address, we'll go in order here. We'll go with Adam first. And I want to ask Adam, is it okay to use the word believer now? Is it okay to believe in what you're doing when you go out there in the field?
Well, if you don't believe in what you're doing, you might as well stop doing it. Like literally go home. I mean, I think what's interesting is Amy and I have talked about this before, but you know, we're done proving the existence of ghosts, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever ghosts are. We're done proving it. We're done saying, you know, say, look at this, because we've done that for, you know, she and I have been working together for 12 years. We've shown so much evidence over the years. That's like, okay, we think this is something, this is really cool. And if you don't believe us by now, then it doesn't matter. So we're not into like convincing people ghosts exist anymore. And I think once we, you know, once we broke free from that pressure, it allowed us to explore even more and have more fun.
All right. Amy, I got to ask, from someone who comes from a background of ghost hunters, and this is a long time ago now, let's just put it that way. You are one that comes from a skeptical background. Is it okay to say the word believer in front of you and use the B word?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for us, ghost hunters was it was such a different animal then. It was like we would walk in and it would be like, all right, your house is haunted, bye. Or we don't think your house is haunted, bye. You know, there was not any like kind of resolution per se. I think they've kind of come around to that in later seasons. But mm-hmm. For us, obviously, we want to be logical. Like we don't want people to think that everything that's happening in their house or business or museum, what have you, is paranormal. And we want to explore all options. But, you know, we go in with the idea that ghosts or spirits could be responsible for what they're experiencing. And we're also very hesitant to even say they're ghosts or spirits. Like we're the first people to say, like, we don't even really know what it is we're dealing with. We just know weird stuff happens. And in our experience, doing this has helped. And so we don't speak in absolutes, but we definitely believe weird stuff happens. So that's as far as we've gotten.
Okay. Chip, I have to ask you, is it finally refreshing to know that it seems like in the past when you've been on other shows, and I won't mention the shows, but when you've been on those shows, you've shown up and they've brought you in and they've used you as part of an investigation, but they quickly take your input off the table. And it seems like it weighs in on the investigation, but it's not a major part of the investigation, whereas it feels like here on Kindred Spirits, it is very much a part of the investigation and a huge part of the investigation. It really feels like what you bring to the table brings weight. And it's a very heavy weight at that. And my friend, you are dead on a lot of the times. I've seen it myself. I've been part of it myself. So I'd have to ask you, does that feel pretty good? Is that pretty vindicating on your part?
I've always wanted to be a valuable part of any investigation that I've ever gone on. And I certainly do feel valued on this show. It's very interesting that on most of the shows that I've done, it's kind of a quick in, quick out. And I give what I am sensing I'm picking up and then I'm gone. Mm-hmm. But with this show, lots of times Amy and Adam will invite me to stay on and be a part of the investigation, which is very nice. And I do feel very respected by my two co-stars on the show. They don't ever make me feel like I'm, just get in here, do your thing, and we're not going to use what you've told us. They do try to utilize what I've said, and that's much appreciated. It's good to feel like you've done something that's valuable or instrumental in helping that investigation along.
Let me ask you, Amy, when you bring in Chip, it really is, it feels like it's that situation where, you know what, we've gotten to a point where we need that extra input where you're not at a crossroads necessarily, where you can't get further in the investigation. You just need that little extra something to put it over the top. When is it when you and Adam get together, and I'll ask Adam the same question after you're done, what is that decision point where you decide you need to bring in Chip?
Well, we always want to bring in Chip, but you know, for us, I talk about a lot how, in our investigations, there's this perfect trifecta that I love to have, when it comes to kind of providing guidance, as to what's happening somewhere. And that is a historical reference, like something that stands up historically to evidence that we've gotten. And then if Chip picks up on those, that as well, like I have all three of those things lined up, that is like amazing to us, you know? And so, we don't like to call Chip a tool, but he's like,
but yes, you do. You've done it a number of times and I've come to embrace it.
Well, like I was, when I was doing my speaking tour in the fall, I kept saying like, if I'm on an investigation without Chip, I'm always like, I wish I had a little Chip on a stick where I could just like, so it's like he's part of the puzzle. And then there's times too where like it's just like evidence, like sometimes evidence will take us down a path that we never thought we would go down, or sometimes Chip will say something and we'll explore that option, especially like historically or through reference materials, and that picks up on something. And so it's really just kind of taking all of our resources and coming to a conclusion. And so Chip is obviously a huge part of that. And, you know, even when he's remote, so people ask all the time, like, how do you use Chip Coffee remotely? I'm like, Chip does readings remotely constantly. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's even more impressive when he's able to kind of tune in from afar. And so it's been always interesting to watch and see what happens when Chip enters the scene.
I'll address that here in a second, Amy. But Adam, I've got to ask you, is there ever a point in when you and Amy are in an investigation, especially when you're filming, and you go, you know what, let's just wait a second, or let's see if we can pick up a little bit more before we call Chip?
I mean, I think it depends on the case. I think sometimes we're in desperate need and we're like, call Chip immediately. And then sometimes we feel like we've got a grasp on something. And so we give it a little bit more time, because the more information that we know that he doesn't know will help us better understand the reading that he's giving. And I think, you know, something that we're not talking about, which is something that Chip does. I mean, we deal with families all the time. Like, we're dealing with families, we're in their homes. And there's, you know, the one thing that families oftentimes want to know about their haunt is like, is it my grandmother? Is it this loved one that I've lost, or, you know, someone that's passed away, and there's some like unfinished business there between the two of them. And Amy and I come to find out, you know, no, it's not. And the really the relief comes from Chip connecting with, you know, the loved ones at times, giving them peace of mind. And, you know, that's something that we can't provide. So I think it's, I think that's one of the things that I love about having Chip on the show. It's like, you know, there's a lot going on in these cases. There's grief, there's sadness, there's loss. And if he can connect with their loved ones for a moment and give them some sort of peace of mind in the end, even if their loved ones aren't in spirit form in the environment, I think that's something that's really beneficial for us in helping families.
There's something, Adam, too, that maybe I can add to that, that I think people may or may not see on camera. They may see it occasionally, but I've seen it more personally. And that is, Chip has a way with people that I think maybe you two can attest to. And that's this, to add to what you just said there, Adam. It's when he's with those people and he's telling them that, you know, it isn't necessarily grandma, or grandma isn't the one behind the haunting. He then goes into psychiatrist or psychologist mode, and also is there to not only comfort that person, but then walk them through it and say, you know, this is how you deal with that grief, and gets them through that moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all do on from a certain extent in our own ways. You know, obviously Chip connects in a psychic way. But you know, there are times that Amy and I are playing, or I say quote unquote playing, therapist, because we're not actual therapists, mm-hmm. but there's a balance there, you know, in talking with the families, we're skirting issues and we are, you know, we're trying to navigate their emotion, this emotional roller coaster, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all in our own way, try to bring some sort of comfort to the living and the dead. And, you know, we joke about it, us being, you know, psychologists to ghosts, but it really is. That's really what it is.
I kind of call it social work to the living and the dead. That's actually in a very funny way. That's what everyone on the show does. Is I think we all find our moments on the show where we've got to really look at what's going on and provide, like Adam said, you know, that comfort and healing to the people that they need. And, you know, I've seen them both do it very well.
Let me ask you an important question here, Chip, and that's this. Is that the difference between someone who is a, and I hate to use this word, but I'm going to use it, a professional investigator, and someone who does it for a hobby? Is that someone can come in and potentially help someone who has a haunting and do it to not only rid them of what's in their home, but also help them through the psychological effects of a haunting? And then someone who comes in and kind of plays investigator and might potentially screw something up in the home?
You've got to be very sensitive about what's going on with the people that are there. Definitely. Because it might be grandma. It might not be grandma. You know, if you go in and you don't really suss out the situation well and deal with the evidence that you're capturing and then deliver it in a very positive and very caring way, then you're not, in my opinion, you're not doing what you should be doing. And I do believe that every paranormal team should have somebody there who has had some training or experience at the very least in doing counseling with the people that are there. You know, you've got to be compassionate with those folks in a lot of instances, because we go in a lot of times and those people are terrified of what's going on. And our job is to figure out the situation and then remediate it the best way that we can and bring some comfort and clarity and healing to those people. That's what Kindred does very well.
Absolutely. And it shows. It really does show in each and every episode. Earlier, we had talked a little bit about you doing some reading remotely, Chip, and I'm curious, season 7, was this filmed during the pandemic or during a time when the pandemic was lifting?
Well, it's very interesting that, you know, I'm getting up in age.
Okay.
And it's harder and harder to travel, and I've got a couple of medical things that I deal with, but I've done 3 episodes this season on location and the rest I've done remotely. Part of this was filmed at a time when the pandemic was winding down, but also I'm a caregiver to a relative of mine that has some needs to have caregiving done. So I have to do a kind of balancing act when I go out and about.
Okay.
Trust me, I want to be on location with Amy and Adam whenever I can be, but circumstances didn't always allow me to do so. So luckily I've been given the opportunity to do things remotely, and I'm very grateful for that. I still feel like that I can contribute, but you know, it's different. I know when I'm there on location, because you get that camaraderie feeling between the three of us, but I think we've done a pretty good job of putting it together under difficult circumstances with me having to do things remotely.
Well, I'm not disparaging anything about that. In fact, what you'll find out when mini spoiler, what you'll find out when you watch the first 3 episodes, at least what I've found out, is that I think Chip is even more dangerous when he's not on site than when he is on site. I think, man, you were hitting. You were hitting on almost everything there, Chip. Being further away,
I think Amy and Adam might argue the point that I'm more dangerous at home. I think they probably think I'm more dangerous when I'm on location, and in certain respects, it may have nothing to do with the paranormal. I can, you know.
are those stories for off air and not on air?
They may be, but let me just add this, if I may, and then I'm going to shut up for a minute.
Sure.
Amy and Adam do all the heavy lifting on the show. There's no doubt about it. They're the ones that, and I say that constantly, and it's how I feel. They're the ones that have to figure all this stuff out. I basically come in and drop the information in their laps, and then kind of I'm gone. But they, I say this constantly. It sounds like I'm sucking up, but I have no reason to. I'm so proud to be a part of this show, because what they do very well, and they do it in a way that is unique, I think, for this show. And the people that watch it can tell the difference between this show and, I dare say, any other show that's on the air, a paranormal show that's on the air. So kudos to my double A's here. They welcomed me in, and I'm really grateful to be where I'm at.
Absolutely. Very cool. Adam, let me ask you, how has the dynamic changed, or how have things changed with the show since Chip has come aboard?
It's given us a lot of opportunities to explore different things that we wouldn't be able to do, right? Like, so, you know, we jokingly say he was a tool, but you know, we're Amy and I are a little bit psychic. And I say that in terms of, like, you know, we don't get messages from the beyond, but we can feel out a location in a space. And we've done experiments where we don't tell each other where we want to investigate. You know, we walk around in the location and then write down on a piece of paper where we want to go first. And they've matched up, because we're trying to, like, feel the environment and get in tune with everything. But it gives us more opportunities to do awesome experiments, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing about Kindred is, we are not afraid to do things that are outside of the box. You know, I've drank haunted honey, for God's sakes. So it's like, you know, we're not shying away from things that might seem a little out there, because we know that the goal is to connect deeper with those that we're trying to communicate with on the other side, find out answers, and help the homeowner. And that's really the main goal. So, you know, the paranormal is always changing. And if you watch, you know, from season one, way back then, you know, she and I had been, you know, they were like, well, what do you want to do for, like, if you were to have your own series, what would you do? And we, you know, Kindred Spirits was it. We talked about Kindred Spirits, but we were flying by the seat of our pants in season one. We just were going and investigating and trying to figure out and see what we can show on television, and what we can tell, the story that we can tell about these homeowners. And now it's sort of evolved into this nice cruise control mode that allows us to make these giant, I don't know, pit stops where we can do these really cool things and experiments and expand and keep pushing the boundaries. And we don't really have any fear because those that watch Kindred Spirits love the show for what we do. And mm-hmm. so we don't have any fear of being like doing something that they're going to hate, because we know that they're into it too. You know, they're into these experiments and into the work that we're trying to do.
Right. And not only that, but the resolution at the end of the program, I think, is refreshing as well. It's not left open to interpretation. There's never anything at the end of the episode that's left open to interpretation, which is really a breath of fresh air as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it is hard. You know, sometimes we're getting to the last day or two and we're like, what in the actual heck are we doing here? We have no idea what it's happening. We have no idea how the case is going to end. We have no expectations of anything. We just go in, do what we do best, and hope to God that we can find a solution, because these families, and, you know, specifically in the season premiere, like, when we arrived there, it's like they're at their wit's end. Like, these people work in this building. They're having this activity. They don't understand what's going on. That one poor guy who's working there, like, he captures something on his cell phone that is absolutely insane, mm-hmm. to the point where when you watch the episode, like, I don't believe, I'm kind of like, wait, what? And Amy's like, oh no, that's crazy. Right. And I'm like, but I don't believe, it's weird, because it's so crazy that I almost don't believe it. But, you know, they're at their wit's end and we have a job to do, and we really have a limited amount of time to do that. And so the pressure is always on.
Right. Let's take our break right here. When we come back, I have an interesting question for both Amy and Adam, and you kind of hinted to it, Adam, and that is the possibility of having an ability beyond, or a psychic ability beyond what you're actually doing when you're investigating. And it has to do with the spirit box. And as I was watching the first three episodes, something kind of hit me. And I want to throw this by you guys when we come back from the break. And then we'll talk about the first three episodes. And what about this season is changing? What about this season has changed our three cast members of Kindred Spirits? We'll talk about how this season has changed them and how it's changed their outlook on investigating. We'll talk about that when we come back as well. We've got the three members of Kindred Spirits, Adam Berry, Amy Bruni, and Chip Coffee. The new season kicks off tomorrow night, Friday, January 20th. You can check in at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central on Travel Channel, or if you have Discovery Plus, just check out Discovery Plus as soon as you wake up there on Friday, and check Discovery Plus for the brand new season, or the first episode. And the first episode is Broken Spirits, so be sure to check for that on Discovery Plus. When we come back, what is it about the spirit box that both Adam and Amy are tuning into? Let's find out when we come back here on The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guests are Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, and Chip Coffee, the cast of Kindred Spirits. And the brand new season begins tomorrow, Friday, January 20th. You can get it on Discovery Plus right away when you wake up there on Friday. Or if you don't have Discovery Plus, you'll have to wait until Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, to catch the first episode. The first episode is Broken Spirits. You know, before the break, I teased that the spirit box, and as I'm sitting here and I'm watching the three episodes that I'd taken in before we sat down here, Broken Spirits, What Lies Below, and Beware the Occult. I sat and watched all three. I believe all three contain the spirit box, if I remember right.
And yes.
I think so, probably. I mean, we try this beer. I don't remember off the top. We try it every episode or every investigation. So it's very possible it's on all three.
And I want to start with you, Amy. I'm interested because it seems you in particular have this connection with the spirit box. Now, you put on the blindfold, you put on the headphones. And I'll get to you in a second, Adam, because I won't say exactly what happens with your session, because I don't want to spoil anything. but Amy, I'm noticing something as you put them on. And now I have to ask you this question. When you're listening to, and most of us who are listening to this program have had an experience with a spirit box or know what it is, or we've seen it on TV, and you hear the kind of the spirit box, and occasionally we'll hear the voices come through. And it's up to our interpretation what it is that's coming through with that voice. What I have to ask you is, are you hearing something other than the voice? Do you sometimes hear a voice above what's coming through on the actual radio?
So that's a really great question. So we did try an experiment this season where we played the spirit box externally as well as having me listen to it. So like Adam could hear the speaker, mm-hmm. And hear what was going into my headphones, even though I couldn't because I had noise canceling headphones. And so sometimes he could hear what I was repeating, but like other times he was like, I don't hear at all what she's saying, you know? So, we do think there is a psychic element to that experiment. And I think that's evidenced in the fact that a lot of people that do the Estes method or the spirit box experiment, they take on the kind of personality of who it is that's talking through it. You know, there's like giggling and like attitude, or like, you know, you can tell that it's more than just repeating words. And so, it's a very strange sensation. Sometimes it gets to be too much. You know, it's basically sensory deprivation at some point.
Yep.
And so it just, it really, like, it depends on who's doing it too. Like sometimes we'll find that a spirit will interact more with me if I don't have the headphones on, or Adam, you know, just, so we kind of switch it up, and it just depends on who's getting the better results. Like we can tell if it's not working with one of us, we switch the headphones over, but definitely a psychic element to it. You can feel it. I mean, that's my opinion anyway, but it's just been, you know, it's become a really huge part of our investigations, and we're always experimenting with it in different ways to see what kind of results we can get.
Because it seems to me when you put the blindfold on, you put the headphones on, like you said, sensory deprivation. But at that point, it also seems to me like it almost forces you psychically to channel, like it's bringing you above and beyond the static then becomes white noise. And it's forcing you to raise your vibration to do more than just listen to the words that may come out from the white noise or the static that's being generated.
I mean, I don't feel like I'm channeling completely, but I will say this: a big part of paranormal investigation is kind of depriving your senses a little bit. That's one of the reasons why we tend to investigate in the dark so often, is because, you know, every sense becomes heightened when you're in the dark because you're kind of on edge already. And so you're really feeling the atmosphere. You're really paying attention to what's going on around you. And so I think this just kind of elevates that a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I don't ever feel like I'm being like, you know, someone's speaking through me or taking over me. You know, I don't feel like I don't feel like someone's trying to get in there or anything like that, but I definitely do feel the emotion. And I think that's just kind of gotten more so as we've investigated more, especially these really emotional cases we go on. I think Adam and I both have just gotten really better at kind of keying into the emotion of a space. And I think the spirit box just kind of lends itself to that.
Well,
can I kick in something here?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've seen Amy and Adam both using the spirit box. They're blindfolded. They have on the headphones that are noise canceling. And you actually at times can see their body language change as they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And you actually can see the expressions on their face change.
Yeah.
And they'll sometimes shift. And if one spirit is talking and then another spirit comes through, there's actually a visual change in the way they interact, the way that they look almost. Mm-hmm. And that's a startling factor to what goes on with this. It's a weird phenomena, but I've actually seen like both of them kind of morph a little bit into what they're hearing on the headphones and the personality of whoever is communicating with them.
That's why I asked the question, Chip, because I don't remember which episode it was, but there's a scene where Amy is sitting there, and as she's almost dictating what she's hearing, her voice goes up a little bit. And it's almost like the look on her face changes, almost like her face isn't completely changing, but it's almost like she's matching what it is, whatever it is that's coming through. So,
right. And that's what I mean when I said that, like, well, I don't think we're fully channeling. Mm-hmm. I do think there is a psychic element to it where we are receiving emotion with it in a way, you know, and it's just like, you can tell the added, it's just like when you're doing an EVP session or you're in a room investigating and you're interacting with a spirit and their responses and whatnot, you can tell their personality. And I think this just kind of, like I said, elevates that to a point where like you're hearing the tone in their voice, you're hearing their answers over and over again, you're hearing like what it is they're trying to convey. And Adam and I are both very emotive people, especially Adam, actor, but like, you know, it's just natural for us to like, if I feel like it's a spirit is trying to talk in a certain way or get something across, I will reflect that. That's, like I said, it's weird. You do feel them and you feel like either their desperation or their sadness or their sense of humor, you know, it's a bizarre place to be. And I think it has, I think that's why it's become such a big part of paranormal investigation.
So for you, would you call it empathic active listening?
I think so. I mean, I think it's just like, it's like when you're sitting in a room and, you know, you're at a dinner party and everybody's having a conversation. You can tell when each person speaks, you can tell who's the jokester. You can tell someone who's like having some issues and is more, you know, upset. You can tell who wants to debate. You can tell, you know, it's mm-hmm. like you key into those personalities. And I think, you know, you have to kind of employ those human interaction lessons we learn with live people. When you start using those, when you're interacting with who we think are the dead, it really is useful.
Okay, interesting. So, Adam, I have to ask you about your spirit box experiences combined, yes. Because it seems like both you and Amy are similar in the way that you react to this experiment where you blindfold and then you put on the headphones. This mm-hmm. season in particular, let's just say you have a different experience. We won't necessarily describe what it is. We don't want to spoil it for the people who are going to watch the episode. But yours is a little overwhelming. And I have to ask you, first of all, when you put on the blindfold and the headphones, what is it that you hear? And then what is it that you see?
Are we talking about, because look, here's the thing. There are two moments this season that I'm thinking of, and I want to make sure that I'm right.
The one in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in the home with the widow,
yes,
the
Barb.
Beware the occult. Yeah, with Barb. Yep.
With Barb.
Yep.
So the thing about the spirit box is it's exactly as Amy is saying. And then there are times rarely I've gotten visuals, and I'm sure Amy has too, but it's you see something in your mind's eye. Like there was this case that we did at the Toboggan Inn where I literally could see from a child's vantage point a woman leaving the space, like walking away from the space. And I could tell the time period. And it seemed to be like late 80s, early 90s. And it was bizarre to me because it was the first time that it had ever happened. But in this specific instance, all of those things that she just talked about came into play. So, you know, you're hearing these voices at times. You're feeling their energy. You're feeling what they feel. And you know, usually I guess it's hard to say, but so you come out of it, you come out of the spirit box session of the Estes method and you're like, okay, that was weird. I don't think it worked. But in this instance, I felt like I was onto something just by being engaged with whoever was speaking through the box. It was as if I could feel their emotions. I kind of got the idea of what was happening on their end, but I didn't know if it was coming across at all. And so I think those moments are really weird. That's a shock moment, I think, in that episode. And in the Beware of the Occult episode, by the way, we didn't name it that. And I think it's tongue in cheek, yeah. guys, because yep. we tongue in cheek. It's not really Beware of the Occult. We know, understand.
Yeah.
But I think in that moment, I just was like, you know what, let me just put it out there before Amy says anything, because, you know, I didn't want to be influenced, I guess. I felt the need to say it. I was like, you know what, it feels like this and I don't know why and it's strange. But all of that comes from doing the Estes method and being immersed in this environment of deprivation that just, I don't know, it works. I don't know how it works. Just try it. Turn on your spirit box and try it.
Well, it is interesting because it gives you the question of this. Do we all have this latent ability to tap into something that is psychic? Do we all have that ability? Or
the answer is yes.
You think so, Chip?
Absolutely think so. I think that everybody has some level of psychic ability, but some people don't get things often or they don't acknowledge them. Some people get things periodically and some people have a heightened sense, but everybody has that gut feeling. Everybody has that little voice. Everybody has that sense of uh-oh or whatever at times, of just kind of knowing you know something, but you don't know how. Amy and Adam both have some level of ability. And I think that heightens when you're around people with a heightened ability. So I've witnessed in person on location the two of them sense the space and sense things that are going on. So when they kind of, I don't know what the reasoning behind it is, kind of downplay the fact that they both are very responsible intuitives. I've watched it happen. Mm-hmm. And they both get very accurate impressions at certain times that I've been with them.
I will say Amy and I, I think Amy and I used to say, oh, we're not psychic, we just have these feelings, but we've moved into a different category lately, just because we, you know, there comes a point where you can't deny the growth of your own spiritual person. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing this for a long time now, and we've started to pay more attention to how we feel and the thoughts we're getting and the interactions we're receiving. And I think the Estes method has helped us in a way tune into that. Right. Okay.
Yep.
So we've sort of stopped being like, oh, we're not psychic at all. We've moved to like, everyone has abilities, like Chip said, and you know, I think we're tuning in more to them lately, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because why not?
I hope they don't get so darn good that they take my job.
Listen, I've been practicing. I will say I've been practicing my Chip Coffee jazz hands and saying things like, oh no ma'am like I've been working on that.
Our executive producer from the network level is Christine, is her name, and Christine says, you know that Chip is onto something if he walks into a space and goes hello.
Right. I've been working on that. I've been going hello, hello, hello,
hello,
hello, hello.
And what are the things, Adam's got these things, and I think for once, you know, I'm not trying to commandeer this thing, but Adam and Amy, what are the things that you guys say that I've said before that you guys make fun of? I love those things, and I need to write them down. One of them is explosive anger, and I don't know the others.
Explosive anger. There hasn't been, you know, those came more often because we were together so much, right? Like on the cases, we were always together, and because the pandemic spoiled it a little bit, it's, you know, there hasn't been that maybe recently of late.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm going to pay more attention to these episodes, and I'm sure there's one or two. But they happen.
My favorite is something just touch that bear.
Oh, yeah. Something just touch that bear.
And when they do their Chip impersonations, they do it with this. real deep Southern accent. And when I hear myself, I don't hear that. So maybe I'm deluding myself.
I got news for you, Chip Coffee.
Yeah. Listen, we all have our quirks. And I think that's what makes Kindred's spirit so special.
Chip, just beware. The final straw before you're going to find yourself out on the street is when Adam starts finding those really, really great designer scarves. That's going to be your sign.
You know, he's got it. They both have their own sense of style that they've got out there going on. So, you know, it's hard to pedal and keep up with those two. They're such fashionistas.
That is true. Speaking of explosive evil, or however you put it, the season premiere of Broken Spirits takes place in a place that is probably so evil, in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, that I gotta think it's gotta be in one of the most evil places you guys have ever been, especially Adam and Amy. Talk to me, speaking of psychic sense, there were a few places that you went in this building, especially you, Amy. I gotta think that this place has got to rank right up there, doesn't it? And Amy, I want you to speak to this. Is it one of those places that you even historically, is it one of those places that ranks right up there as far as an evil haunting?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say what's there is evil per se, but what happened there was certainly evil. You know, there were terrible things that went on. It was a former poorhouse, and you know, poorhouses back in the day were kind of where people went when they couldn't fend for themselves, or no one was around to take care of them, for any number of reasons. And there was a particular gentleman who ran the place who was just very cruel. And he kind of historically, like, just did really awful things. Like, there were people chained in the basement, people were abused, people were starved. And so the thing is, like, as someone who's really into research and history, a lot of this was very well documented and on site. Like, they did a really good job of curating, like, what actually went on there. And so it's hard to read that. Just, I think that's one of the parts of being a paranormal investigator that I don't know everyone really thinks through, is that sometimes you're walking into places where really just awful, unimaginable things happened, and your brain is going to go there. You're going to think about it. You're going to picture it. You're going to feel it. You're going to, you know, it's going to haunt you, not just in a paranormal sense. And it can take its toll. And this is definitely one of those places.
Most definitely. Adam, when you went into that poorhouse, what was one of the more overwhelming things to hit you as far as just a matter of cruelty? What was the most cruel thing that you saw there that really is sticking with you today?
I think just the idea that, you know, that mother and daughter or baby or mother and child were put together in, you know, an actual dungeon. Let's talk about it, like an actual dungeon. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. That's cruel. That is, it's horrible to think about people suffering in that way. The fact that, you know, one of the people that owned that or ran that building took all of the money for himself and would throw lavish parties, and the abuse that these people had. And, you know, these individuals that lived there, that needed to live there, this was their only place they could go. And to just have nowhere else to go and still be suffering, it's hard to think about and comprehend. So if their spirits are still there, obviously the goal is to bring some sort of comfort and peace to them.
Let's talk a little bit about the first three episodes. The second episode is in Palmyra, and an interesting episode at that. One of the things, and we won't go too much into the individual episode or spoil too much about it, but one of the things about the episode, which is interesting, you're investigating a museum. There's a recent fire, which triggers a family of spirits, but there's also the ghost of a doctor, a rather barbaric doctor that's there. So there's kind of a mishmash of spirits in this area. But one of the things about this and is that you kind of have to separate all of this stuff from each other. Amy, talk to us about the difficulty of trying to sometimes separate multiple hauntings. How do you as an investigator get down to the very heart of what it is that's wrong with one particular location?
Well, that was a tough one because they were like, hey, you guys, we need help with this entire city block. We're like, okay, we'll see what we can do. So there were a number of locations. We couldn't show everything on the episode. We probably could have investigated there for another couple weeks. It was one of the most fascinating cases we've ever done. But it was this kind of, you know, we had this group of volunteers and employees who were just, you know, just so emotionally involved with this location and were desperate for answers. And so we actually kind of had to call on the spirit of someone else in another building and ask them questions about the hauntings. And we've had to do that a few times. Like if you look at it collectively as like a community of ghosts, sometimes you have to go knocking on doors and talk to other ghosts and find out what happened. And so we use that to our advantage. And so it was definitely difficult trying to narrow it down. You know, you have three different buildings, you have a terrible fire, you have a number of historical artifacts, any one of which could be haunted, you know, a number of different types of activity. You know, it was one of those things where we definitely felt overwhelmed within the first day or so, but historically fascinating. You know, it is very near to the birthplace of spiritualism. So we got to really dive into where it all began for us as paranormal investigators. So just a really great location, very sad story, lots of activity, more than we could even show. So I guarantee there will be bonus scenes coming out of that case.
Oh, very cool. One of the things, and I think maybe whether it's Amy or Adam that wants to address it, one of the things that came up in that episode that I thought was really cool is you actually go to the home of a psychic that's passed away, and you do a seance to contact her. And you get results, which is amazing. Do you want to speak to that?
I mean, real quick. So that sure. Woman, her name was Sybil. She was a very big spiritualist in that area. She was actually one of the people who was responsible for saving the foundation of the Fox Sisters cabin, which is very nearby. And so we knew if any ghost was there that knew what we were doing and would be able to speak to us, she was the one. And that's what I mean when we like reached out to someone. Like the staff felt quite an affinity to her because there's a number of her belongings there. Her seance table is there, her crystal ball is there, her cards, her books, like really, really important stuff. And it was a very spiritual moment, I think, for us to be able to do that and for it to work. So people have to watch and see what happens.
Yeah. And it's one that I had to say, get results. I'm not going to tell you what results, but you got results in that, you know, it can't, I have an interesting question for Chip here in a second, but, I gotta say, Adam,
yeah.
In that moment when you're sitting there in the seance, is it very surreal for you that you're in a seance trying to contact a psychic? What's running through your head at this point when you're how surreal is that moment for you?
Amy and I have talked about this a lot. You know, we see you know, obviously we see all the cuts of the episodes. We see the rough cuts, we see the fine cuts, we give notes. And during the first rough cut of this episode, there was very little of that in the episode. And we both lost our absolute minds. And we were like, this has to be in the case. Like it has to be in the episode because it is one of the most powerful things I think we've ever got to do on Kindred Spirits. The idea that you're talking about someone whose religion revolved around the spiritualist movement. We've asked her to come to her own seance table. We have her own crystal ball. We have her own books. We have her picture. We have her chairs. We're in her parlor. And, you know, as investigators now, we're like, let's see if we can basically conjure her get her into this room and talk to her. Yeah. And if that doesn't show you that there's life after death, I don't know what will. I don't know what will.
Yeah.
I mean, it basically says, look how far we've come with, you know, this movement. Look where we are now. And here is proof that there is something, like there's something going on. It's something that I'm never going to forget. And for us to go and visit the Fox Sisters property too, on top of it all, was really incredible.
Yeah. It's a wild moment. It was just one that stuck with me. I thought, wow, I don't know. It just kind of blew me away. So Chip, with that, I want to ask you this question, and that's this. I mean, we all don't stay here forever. We know that. So if someone tried to conjure you, my friend, let's say our friends here, Amy and Adam, once you had, you know, kind of slipped through that veil and went to the other side, what would it take to get you to come back here and talk to Amy and Adam? And what would you say to them?
I can answer that. It's going to be a Diet Coke.
I would say a regular Coke, maybe some Tanger champagne, well, a Bloody Mary.
If I kick off before they do, they better fasten their seatbelts, because I'm going to haunt the F out of both.
So it wouldn't take much to bring you back. But what words would you have to say to them?
I'd probably say something like, something just touched that bear.
Something naughty, because I always joke that he's the dirtiest birdie I know.
We probably have some interesting conversations. Yeah. Put on that headset and blindfold yourselves and get ready, bitches. Here it comes. I'm hoping, if they're out there still investigating kindred spirits after I kick off, the deal is I'm still going to be a part of the team. Just call on me and I'll give you info.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. That would be incredible.
I don't want to think about this.
Yeah, I don't either. What? Stop.
But what an angle. I mean, come on. That would be the ultimate. Travel Channel would sign you for the rest of your lives if you could manage that deal.
I think we should pitch the show now and get it on the
Oh my God.
There you go.
I hate this. This conversation's giving me anxiety.
Okay,
we're done, kids.
We'll move on to the third episode.
It's not exactly making me feel all alive and well either.
I didn't mean to induce anxiety here, kids. That's not what I meant to do here.
With what both Amy and Adam have said, you know, I think it's a real interesting concept to try to contact a psychic. I mean, and a medium. I mean, how much more interesting can you get than somebody who lived her life trying to communicate with the spirits, being a spirit herself and coming back and communicating with you? That's big.
That's huge. That's like I said, I was blown away when I saw it. And in my mind, I went back to the whole Houdini thing. You know, Houdini had the whole, you know, hoops to jump through and here's how you get to me and here's my safe word. But if you couldn't get to Houdini, the fact that you could get to a psychic by using her accoutrement, so to speak, and sit down and say, well, here we are, we're in your parlor, here's your crystal ball, here are your things, we're sitting here and we're summoning you, come and get it, you know, and there she is. It's pretty intriguing. That's for sure. I mean, I got goosebumps watching it. So
TV.
It is. My hat's off to the two of you, because that was pretty darn special.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up too, because it brings the point. You know, Adam and I, like Adam said, we really push for that to be in the episode, and the fact that it resonated with you tells us that we pushed for the right thing. So that's
exactly
great. Yeah, it is very special. The third episode that I had the pleasure of watching was, again, as Adam pointed out, the not so appropriate title of Beware the Occult, because it really didn't have all that much to do with that. And you'll find out why when you watch the episode. But it's interesting in that you have this distressed widow who calls you guys for help. She finds a Bible in the attic and we go from there. It's got strands of hair in the Bible. And she claims that she's trying to get in touch with her husband who's passed away. And there's a family that had lived in the home previous to them moving in. And you find out more from that about that family as you guys go through the episode. This is a good example of know what you're doing before you start to investigate your own home, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, first off, the title of the episode is pure clickbait. Okay, it's pure clickbait. Yeah. It's that subject line in an email where you're like, "Ooh, what's this?" and you click it. Pure clickbait. But the episode pays off, I say.
It does.
I think if we'd seen that before it was released, we probably would have pushed back on that one. So we're going to make that known.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. Because when I saw the title, I went, "Ooh, beware the occult." And then I started watching, I went, that's probably only accurate as to what the homeowner was into. That's about it.
But if you really look at it, occult, you know, it's sort of gotten a new meaning in current culture. But really, if you look up the word occult, I think the pure definition of it is just that which is hidden or unseen.
True.
So, whoever titled the episode might have been going in that direction. I don't know. I don't think it was the slam it meant anything.
Well, and, you know, if you're, again, without spoiling the episode, Chip, I can't go into why somebody might name it that, or the person who named the episode would name it that, but you'd have to go from the perspective of one of the players in the drama, put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about that episode though, is, you know, the Bible thing, like my granny had a Bible like that, mm-hmm. you know, she mm-hmm. had a Bible that was that old, and there were like hair clipping, like your first haircut clippings would be in there, and like, you know, death records and death dates. So, but you know, seeing something like that or finding something like that in your home can be unnerving, because you're like, I don't know what this is. Like, I don't know what this means.
Sure.
But Amy and I knew right off the bat, you know, this is not a spoiler alert. We knew right off the bat, like the Bible wasn't the thing, right? Like it might be connected to the family, but you know, that's not the thing that's causing the activity for sure.
Correct.
But what's great about that episode is, you know, it mirrors what some people still feel today about what we are doing in the paranormal. You know, it's there are people that really like what we do, and there are people that think we're always talking to the devil. And I think, you know, it's about being afraid of things that you don't understand. But in this case, is compromising with people who would have never even understood it at all, would have never crossed their mind. And it's a pretty powerful episode.
It's very powerful. And I'm glad you put it that way, Adam. That's a great way of putting it. People don't realize, and especially when we talk so openly about it in today's age, we think, well, and especially with a lot of people leaving the church, we'll put it that way, and finding their own spiritualism, you think, oh, of course it's okay to talk about the paranormal. Of course it's okay to talk about such spiritualism. But you go to different areas in the South and you mention things like ghost hunting or paranormal investigation, or you even talk about reading tarot cards or things like that. And immediately you get a section of the public that shuts right up. You know, it's one of those things where you just don't talk about it. And you forget that sometimes, that it's not as open as we think it is in some sections of society. And we'll just put it this way, that there are certain culture clashes that we sometimes don't realize are still there. And we just have to be careful sometimes of who it is we're speaking to. I've had that happen on airplanes, where I say what I do for a living and I get, oh, and that's it, you know, and you go, oh, I forgot, you know. It's kind of funny.
I always say I'm a project manager.
Oh, that's a good one. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I used to be a project manager, so I can still talk the talk. So people ask me, I'm like, oh, I'm a project manager.
And I'm very careful. I do live in the South, and I'm very careful sometimes when people ask me what I do. I say, I'm a counselor.
That's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. And again, I thoroughly did enjoy that third episode as well. And I, you know, if I have to pick favorites, I think that third one, the Beware the Occult, was probably one of my favorites and I've seen quite a few of your shows. One of my favorites of all time, I think, because I have been investigating for a while, and I just, I for reasons I can't say, oh, I want to say it so bad. There's a reason I really love that episode, and it's just kind of an ironic reason. And I'll let people watch that episode and they'll see why. There's a reason why we say what we say at times, and I think you put it eloquently, Adam, about, cultures and respecting cultures. I think that's, you know, sometimes we have to just be respectful of others. That's a good way of putting it. I want to tip my hat as well to you guys. You did an excellent job in the episode of pointing out that we need to respect each other's cultures too. That's one of the things that you did a wonderful job of doing as well in that episode. So I want to tip I want to tip my hat to you in that as well. So I have to ask this question as we start to close up the program here today. What is with this seventh season? I mean, you guys have some excellent locations that you guys are going to. I mean, you're going back to Gettysburg this year. You're out in Rhode Island. You're in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And you're going to these different locations and you're getting closure for some of these different cases. But what is it in the seventh season that you're learning about yourselves, about your investigating, about other people? What is it that you're advancing in the seventh season that you haven't in these six seasons previously? And I'll start with...
Amy, he just set you right up, didn't he?
I guess so. This has been my thing in every interview.
All right. Let's start with Amy then.
Well, I think this might resonate with all of us, but this season... So every season kind of has a theme. Mm-hmm. But this season was really about regret. And I think... We just time and time again, we kept encountering these kind of spirits and souls who were regretful about something that they did in life. And that was enough for them to not move on to wherever they go. Right. Or even just some, like there's one case in particular where this spirit was just very much not ready to go. She just wanted to stay and keep looking at her birds and her bird feeder, and like her living memories were so wonderful. She wasn't ready to leave them. And so it just taught us and resonated with us this idea of like, we need to live our lives to the absolute fullest, you know, kind of lest we end up in that scenario. And I know it's just, I have not shaken that theme since we wrapped filming season seven. Like I've just been very, personally on a personal level, just really living life with purpose and trying to enjoy every single moment of it and being so grateful and not leaving any stone unturned and not leaving things unsaid, because it was such a powerful message in season seven. So paranormal, I don't know, but I do feel like that was something that for some reason needed to get across, not just to us, but to everyone watching. And so I think it's honestly our most powerful season yet for that reason.
Okay. Adam?
You know, I'm going to have to echo what Amy said. Okay. There is a, you know, there's always a reason for us to be doing what we're doing, and we never know what we're going to expect on the episodes. I think in season one, we kept encountering the ghost of children, and it was hard to take, you know, it was hard to deal with. And I think last season was about family relationships. And in this season, it's, you know, I think it's a lesson that we can all learn over the past couple of years, because it's been hard. It's been very hard for everybody. No matter what your belief system was or what you believe or what you like, it's hard. And I think, you know, taking stock of what we have, and appreciating it is the way that we should, continue to live our life. You know, but from the paranormal standpoint, there's a lot of, different experiments that happened this season. There's a lot of, people that, you know, we meet, experts and, people that help us, learn history. You know, it's everything you want in Kindred Spirits, just elevated. Let's just say that.
All right.
Everything that you want, but we've elevated it. We've one-upped. We've leveled up.
You've leveled up. That sounds good. That sounds good. And a reminder to folks, not only does the season start tomorrow night on Travel Channel, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central Time, that again on Travel Channel, you'll also be able to find it on Discovery Plus. And I know Amy and Adam, you'll be at Michigan Paracon, right? this year?
Yes. All yes, right. Yes.
Chip, yes. We're all over the place this year.
Okay. Chip, you're going to be there as well?
My intention is to be there. Yes.
There you go. So all three will be at Michigan Paracon. We'll have a link in the description of this program so you can get your tickets to see all three at Michigan Paracon as well. So, gang, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
All right. I want to thank Amy, Adam, and Chip for being with us today here on Darkness Radio. It's greatly appreciated that they stopped in. Remember, Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central on Travel Channel. Of course, it's available on Discovery Plus anytime on Friday on demand. For Kindred Spirits, be sure to check it out, folks. Again, I got to screen the first three episodes of the season, and I'm telling you, all three episodes, awesome. All three episodes completely different, and all three episodes really have something different to pull away than you've seen in the paranormal field. I encourage you to check it out. Very good programs this year on Kindred Spirits. Folks, I want to remind you this weekend to not only take care of yourself, take care of each other, but also, if you could, just a little extra something this weekend. During the week, we lost Jay Briscoe from Ring of Honor Wrestling. I know a few of our audience are rolling their eyes when I say wrestling or wrestler. Keep in mind, Jay Briscoe was 38 years old. Think about how young that is, 38 years old. He left behind a wife and young children. Jay was a provider for his family. And Jay just not only had wrestling in his background, Jay also had a landscaping company and also farmed chickens. I mean, he had other businesses as well as wrestling, and he did those with his brother Mark. He was extremely prolific, extremely busy, always had something going on other than wrestling. Not only that, but Jay was a man who touched so many people in his life. Completely not the character you saw on screen. Folks, I can't tell you how much our buddy, Beer City Bruiser, is in pain right now, is hurting, really is devastated by the loss of his friend, Jay Briscoe. So my wish this weekend is that you would keep our buddy, Beer City Bruiser, in your thoughts and prayers this weekend as he lost his friend this week and is really hurting by that. So just keep the friends and family of Jay Briscoe in your prayers this weekend, in your thoughts. Send them some love. Send them some energy, whatever it is that you believe in, and help them with the healing process this weekend. This one's tough to get over, folks. Any death is tough to get over, but this one's really tough, especially when you lose someone who has brought so much to the world and someone who's bringing so much to the world, so much energy, so much to, especially to entertain the masses. It's tough. Someone like Lisa Marie Presley, some of the great entertainers we've lost recently, it's really tough to deal with those losses. Hopefully Beer City Bruiser will be with us next week. I'm hoping he will be. He'll have that option though. If it's too much for him, he'll have that option. I'm hoping he'll be with us next week, but I just want to let Bruiser know that we love you, buddy. We're with you here on this show. Our audience, I am, and whatever he needs, he has. So we realize what a huge loss this is for him. He knew Jay for many, many years, and it's hard when you travel with somebody like that, a true brother, you know, on and off the road. That kind of loss is not an easy one to stomach. So we love you, Bruiser. Take care of yourself this weekend, buddy. It's a tough weekend, too, because Bruiser's supposed to be wrestling this weekend. He's supposed to be wrestling Jerry the King Lawler, so it's supposed to be a happy weekend for him, and even though it's supposed to be a happy weekend for him and a good weekend for him, I suppose that's looming over him as well. So keep your thoughts and prayers out there for the family and friends of Jay Briscoe, and keep your love out there for Beer City Bruiser. Drop him a note. Let him know that you're thinking about him. And that you're sending your love out to him in his time of need. And as well, do something nice for somebody this weekend if you can. You know, there's we're in the winter season, folks. It's snowing. It's cold. It's cold everywhere, folks. If you've got an extra coat, an extra blanket, an extra $5, whatever you can, help somebody out there who's in need, and do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. That's all we ask. We'll be back next week with some great shows for you. Thank you so much for being a listener of this program and continuing to support us. We also want to thank our sponsors, Microdose Gummies, HelloFresh, and Blue Chew, for being on board with us here. If you have a question about any of our sponsors or how to get a hold of our sponsors, it's real simple. Go to our webpage, darknessradioshow.com, and click on any of the sponsors at the bottom of the front page, and you'll be able to follow those icons that are at the bottom of the page and get your questions answered by any of our sponsors. Their icons are up, and you can go ahead and get any information you want to now on darknessradioshow.com about our sponsors. So thank you once again to HelloFresh, to Microdose Gummies, and to Blue Chew for sponsoring the program. We greatly appreciate you as well. We'll see you again next week, folks. Thank you so much for listening to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.